Happy New Year.
Welcome to the Dawn of Shades. This is Gia Scott, your host for tonight. And today is the 1st of July, 2007. It's kind of amazing to think that the year is already halfway over. We're on the downhill slide. You know, we've done the first 6 months, and now we're working on the last 6 months. Lots and lots of things going on. The time has just been flying by. I have deadlines flying into my face, and I'm nowhere near ready for them. Yeah, many of us have some important deadline hanging over our heads this summer. Whether it's a public deadline or not, it doesn't matter. Sometimes motivation to meet the deadline comes from something far from public. For over the last few weeks, the topic filling every phone call I make or receive seems to be focused on my engagement and wedding plans. I've been pressured to make decisions that I had no idea I was going to get faced with. Here I thought the dilemma of paper or plastic at the grocery store was traumatic. First, it was a date, which I did tentatively set. And there's another one of our polls posted on the website, which is exogenynetwork.com. When we have things more firmly set, we'll actually post a formal statement along with the stats for what viewers thought were the right answers along the way for the poll, compared to the real ones. It's kind of fun to see how many listeners can tune into me, perhaps. The next decision was colors. It seems that rainbow was not an acceptable answer either. This program contributed to that decision, so it's shades of... And once again, you can put in your vote on the color at the website, ExogenyNetwork.com. On the shoe thing, I had no idea I was supposed to specify shoes, for crying out loud. I did make a decision on that one. My decision was, yes, they have to wear shoes. I really don't care if it's heels, flats, sandals, or combat boots, as long as they wear shoes, and they're not whining with their feet hurt. I did express a wish to the groom that he didn't wear high heels. I just didn't see that it would go with a suit all that well. And I have to admit, he did completely agree with me. The big wedding month is June, and for all those June brides who just finished their weddings, you have my undying respect at this moment. I don't know how you did it. I haven't even found the right church yet. And that brings me to another story. The story of a small church in Iowa that I have visited several times, and you may have also visited. How many of you remember a song called The Little Brown Church in the Vale? That church is actually located in Iowa, and I visited it most recently last year in November. And I think it was actually November 2nd, a Friday, when I was there with my daughter. On the website, www.exogenynetwork.com, there was a photo my daughter took of the church that day, actually two photos, and my webmaster has so kindly posted them up there for us. There's just something kind of nice about that church. It's a place that, despite the many people who have visited it and walked through it over the years, just has a really good feeling to it. Small church, kind of place that when it's filled to capacity, you will still know everybody's name that's there. I wanted a church like that for my wedding, but I was a little bit off the beaten path for both of our families, although I at least have family within a couple hundred miles of it, which is why I was in the vicinity last November. But try Googling for small church and see what you find, and that's without searching for a particular denomination. I don't even know that I'll be able to find such a church for our small little wedding. I can guarantee someone's going to come up with a question, though, that they think is much more critical than what state I'm going to get married in. And I'll be floored at the complete unexpectedness of it. Like music, someone will surely ask that before I even know where I'm going to be hearing it. But on that musical note, we have a fascinating guest on the program tonight. We actually have two fascinating guests on tonight, just for variety for our audience. The first hour is Dion Mandel, and we'll be hearing a little bit about Tibetan healing bowl and the music she uses for sound healing. The second half will be Karen Anderson, an animal communicator. On our website, we have an amazing live page for Diane tonight, so go check it out. These live pages are only up for a short time. So go to exogenynetwork.com. That's spelled exogenynetwork.com. And click on the live link with the one after it for the on the page. And without any more babbling from me, I'm going to let our guest do our own introduction. So, Dion, would you be so kind as to introduce yourself to our audience tonight?
Yes. Hello, everybody. My name again is Deanne Mandel, and I work with Tibetan bowls, gongs, and harmonic sound instruments for the purpose of healing and well-being. I've been doing this for about 10 years, and I'm based in Southern California.
Uh-huh. And so that we can start this off, can you tell us a little bit about what is healing with sound? A lot of us don't really know anything about it.
Healing with sound is the process of recalibrating or realigning your energetic system to the memory of well-being through using these instruments, through brainwave synchronization to the frequency of these instruments. So basically, we are aligning your energetic body, and we are aligning them to the vibration of the seed syllable Om, which is the syllable, which is the frequency that the bowls are tuned to, even though they have many different tones. They're producing harmonics, and the process is through brainwave entrainment. The way that I work is I work over a series of weeks with several weeks with people to create an anchoring process. And anchoring is simply the process of working with cellular memory to establish a pattern that the unconscious body, the energetic body, the cells in the body recalls and remembers. And so the process that I'm working with is anchoring people to the memory of well-being. That is really, really, in a nutshell, what we're going for. What that means is a great reduction in stress, reduction in pain, and I don't know if your listeners are aware, but about 90% of visits to doctors are because of stress-related conditions. Hello? Is anybody there?
I think I'm back. Can you hear me now?
I'm back.
Okay.
I don't know at what point we went on. When we went on.
No, we're still on the air. Everybody heard you. Nobody heard me for a second there. What I was going to ask you more about was, what sorts of situations would this harmonic tones be of real use in healing someone?
Oh, there's just such a gamut. When you think about, stress-related conditions, I work as part of the integrative medicine team at the integrative therapy team at the Cancer Center in San Diego. So I'm working with a lot of cancer patients to help reduce stress, reduce pain, help people sleep better, help people to have less reaction to adverse reaction to medication like nausea. The moment you relieve people of stress, there's just such a plethora of other symptoms and conditions that begin to disappear or diminish. So healing from chemotherapy or from cancer post or pre, very, very effective with sleep disorders, fibromyalgia. Again, all of these things are things that have as a base stress or anxiety. And my own definition of healing is a spiritual awakening that affects the physical body. The bowls are created to help with consciousness transformation, and that means to help bring up for the client to see and to become aware of those core realities that they need to pay attention to, and then helps them to release those things. So I work with people who are in pain, people who have anxiety issues, people who, and also people who have a hard time sleeping, but also people who are just simply not feeling close to themselves, people who are wanting to get a stronger sense of confidence, to heighten their sense of self-esteem, and also to bring people into better connection with each other and with themselves, because that's really what these instruments do. They really, it's not just a mental or a cognitive, it is a visceral experience of one's essence. And it's when you feel that, and when you sense that, you go to a very, very quiet place in yourself, and you feel your own perfection. Even if it's just for a few moments, it has an astounding transformational effect on you. So I work with, as I said, work with people with dire physical conditions, all the way to people who are just searching spiritually for more, for strengthening their spiritual life with themselves and with their interconnection with their communities and with their loved ones.
Well, I find it really interesting. You know, I'm sure that I'm not alone. I know a number of people who suffer from chronic severe pain for a variety of reasons, from my daughter who has diabetic neuropathy to, you know, friends who have back injuries and just unknown, you know, pain. They've been through all sorts of diagnostics, and nobody can tell them why they're in pain or do anything much for the pain. They're basically just told that they have to live with it. And that can be a really draining thing over time, I think.
Absolutely.
To live in pain like that. So, you know, the idea of that this could help alleviate some of the, at least the stress of the pain. Because it seems like sometimes, you know, watching them, they get in this cycle of the pain causes stress, which increases the pain, which increases the stress, you know, that's a pretty tough scenario, you know?
Well, and also when you're in pain and when you're not feeling well, the texture of your whole life revolves around that. And so what you do is you perpetuate it, because we as human beings tend to judge and see ourselves as our weakest link. So if we're in pain for a while, then we become that pain. And the purpose of these instruments is to help us to get out of that experience and get a larger perspective, so that we begin to retrain ourselves to focus on all the things that are well in our life. And you know, it sounds like, well, but I'm in pain. How can I focus? I don't know how many of you out there have children, but I know that I do, and I remember many, many times where the kids were just so loud, and they were just being kids, and I needed to focus on something else besides the sound of their nerve-wracking voices, and I would be able to sort of tune them out because I was focusing on that which I really needed to focus on. And we can do that with pain, but we have to learn how to do that.
Even when my daughter, when she was little, okay, if she fell down and skinned her knees, I would tell her, jump up and down real quick. But when you're really little, to jump up and down requires concentration. She was concentrating on something besides the pain. Therefore, jumping up and down did make it quit hurting.
It did, and this is in a different way.
This helps
diminish it through complete relaxation, the ability to completely remove the stress.
Yeah, I find that interesting because, you know, like I said, you know, personally, I know a number of people who, you know, are in that cycle, and there's very little that, you know, you can do for someone except just be there, I guess. And, you know, even when you are listening to someone that is in chronic pain, when you are with them, it becomes a draining, negative sort of thing for, you know, their caregivers, too. and their friends and their family and everyone else, you know, and you start to, I guess, in a way, you start assuming that pain and stress with them. You're not alleviating their load at all. You're just putting it on yourself, too.
And that doesn't accomplish anything.
No, it doesn't. I have great respect for people who work in hospice roles because that must be one of the most difficult things to do is when you're dealing with people who are in chronic pain and you know, and near the end of their life, and it must be very stressful. So, tell us a little bit about the bowls themselves. You know, what are they made of? How are they made?
They were, all the instruments that I use are all ancient, and when I say ancient, it's not by American standards, it's by Tibetan standards. So we're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old versus, you know, in this country, if it's 50, it's old. It's
yeah,
an antique. And in Europe and in Asia, old means a lot older than that. So we're talking about instruments that are very old, that are made out of 7 metal alloy, gold, silver, tin, mercury, lead, iron, and copper. And the iron in these instruments have come from meteorite deposits, so it's pure iron called sky metal. And they were, hundreds of years ago, when there were communities in Tibet that were creating these instruments before the Chinese invasion, and in those times, the metallurgists lived in the monasteries, and they would go out into the hills of the Himalayas and collect the metals, bring them back, and pound them into shape and sound while the monks were chanting mantras and blessings into them. So these ancient instruments all contain the energy of these blessings and these mantras as well. And then the bowls were used in sacred ceremonies and, you know, in pujas, and so they also have that history that is part of their inheritance. So they were created for the purposes of consciousness transformation and physical healing. They were never created, as many bowls were in many cultures, for, you know, begging or drinking vodka out of or other things. They were made for those two specific purposes, and that's the only thing that they have ever been used for: consciousness transformation, deepening meditation, deepening your awareness of the interrelationship of all things. So all the metals are correlated with the planets, and so they have different aspects of planetary astrological configuration as well. Each bowl produces harmonics, and the harmonics, the human ear can hear about 5 different tones in every bowl, even though there's many, many more. And animals actually can hear a lot more. Animals can hear higher and lower tones than humans can. But we can hear about 5 different tones, so when you're playing several of them, then the tones are, you know, harmonics upon harmonics upon harmonics. So it's really very beautiful.
It sounds so. Now, when you through these, playing these bowls and using the harmonics to heal, can you also do this? You know, I know that you give sessions for both groups and smaller groups and even individuals. But, you know, say for someone that a session isn't possible, they live on the East Coast and you're not going to be there in the next year, you know, do you have audio tapes or CDs?
I have CDs. I also do distance sessions over the phone, and for that it requires that people get earphones that will go into both ears, because it's really important that you hear the sound coming into both ears. And I set the bowls up exactly as I would set them up if the person was in my living room, and then through intention, I work with that person over the phone, and that is astoundingly powerful as well. But I do have CDs, and I do concerts. I don't do very many concerts on the East Coast because traveling with these, they're heavy. They're pretty darn heavy, and I work with gongs as well, and the airlines have just made it about impossible to to travel with these instruments without shipping them, and then it becomes exorbitantly expensive. So
yeah,
I travel a lot, but
I
drive.
You drive? Okay.
A typical tour for me is anywhere between 2,000 and 2,700 miles.
That's a fair amount of driving. How long, for a single session, a single concert, you drive that far?
No, that's a tour.
Okay,
so I would do, 10, 15 concerts, and then I would be doing, I'm going in August, I'm going to Las Vegas and then to Utah. I'm only doing 2 concerts, but I have about 15 or 20 sessions, that I'm private sessions that I'm doing while I'm there.
Oh, okay.
So that helps to, offset the costs of the travel.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many things that I was, I'm curious about. Exactly, why are these bowls different, say, than using electronically produced tones?
There's always something that changes in electronics, and people are always asking me the difference between coming to a session and listening to a CD. In the digital process, there are some of the vibrations and some of the, just the elemental qualities of the instruments are negated or neutralized in the digital process. Plus, these, all the digital stuff comes from, these were the first. These are the ancient, these are the grandfathers of all of the, the types of digital processes and digital, even the tuning forks and all of that. The originators are these instruments. So that I like using something that's historical, that has that kind of history and intrinsic energy in it. And I much prefer using the instruments than electronic stuff. That's my personal preference.
Well, I think a lot of people kind of feel that way. I mean, there's a big difference in listening to someone play an acoustic guitar versus an electric guitar versus a synthesizer,
Right, and there's a difference between sitting at a concert and listening to a record or a CD.
Yeah, very much so. Even if you've got a fantastic sound system, it's still not the same as being there.
Right.
The energy is so much different. And there again, that's the key. The energy is so much different.
The energy is different. The surrounding is different. You don't have the contribution of the energy of the people, the other people. I mean, all of that contributes to whatever you're doing.
Yeah, it really does. For me, it was a lot different to do radio versus dealing with a live audience.
Yeah.
Because the energy is different. It wasn't the same, and it was kind of hard at first. I can understand that there is a difference there. Now, as far as the Tibetan bowls go, how did you learn how to play them?
I was on the East Coast working as a polarity practitioner, and I met my teacher there, who was working with the sound pioneer and was working with these instruments for many years. He was also a Tibetan Buddhist, and I was already working in the healing arena, and he was really a teacher versus a healer. And so I learned from him. I took workshops for 2 years and followed him around, became his assistant, and learned from him, and I was completely enthralled with these instruments from the very first time I heard them. And so I learned how to use them, and he did not want to do healing sessions, and basically I became the first certified sound healer from Sacred Sound Workshops using these instruments. And this was, 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. Then I moved out to California, and I started a private practice here. And this, at that time, I was one of just a handful of people who were working with Tibetan bowls not only in this country but around the world. And And I started a private practice and decided that the instruments and the modalities were so effective, I really felt a need to do some education myself. And that's why I started doing the concerts, because my concerts, aside from being concerts, sound healing concerts, there's also an element of education in them where we are able to talk about them and people, you know, I could introduce them to larger groups of people. And so that is, you know, that is just an expansion of the private sessions. And then I started working at the Cancer Center, and now I'm working, I've just opened a school. I've been doing, you know, I do presentations and classes at different healing schools, you know, acupuncture schools or colleges for the nursing students or the more and more colleges have holistic health departments now, so I'm becoming more and more involved with them. So I am also becoming more and more of a teacher and a mentor to my students, because over the last, I would say, 2 or 3 years, there's just been a popping up of sound healers. Most of them are not trained. Most of them get a couple of bowls and really don't know what they're doing. They can't really do terrible harm, but with my teacher, we started a school because we really wanted to establish a high standard for practitioners and for clients, so that clients can feel safe that they're in the hands of someone who's really been trained and who really has had a lot of practice sessions and mentoring and knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. The first sound healer I was exposed to, oh, I guess that was probably 10 years ago, but she sang. She did singing.
Was that on the East Coast?
No, this was actually in New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember much about her. At the time, I was kind of, well, I don't know about this. My grandmother had a stroke and was, at that point, just semi-comatose.
Uh-huh.
And that was part of the overall therapy program that we had going for. You know, and we were never sure, you know, how much good it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was one of the things that we did do. We had this woman who came in, I mean, she came in 3 days a week and sang for about 15 minutes.
Well, she did toning or she sang songs?
You know, I don't remember it being, she had to have some sort of words, or would have probably really looked at her oddly, because we weren't familiar with tones at all. But as far as it being like hymns or, you know, any genre of music, no, I don't recall anything like that. But she sang a cappella, mm-hmm. and she'd just stand by my grandmother's bed and she'd sing. And, you know, like I said, you know, that was my first exposure to someone using sound as mm-hmm. any type of therapy.
Well, sound therapy has been around for quite a while, but not always in this form. I think it's been, harps have been around for a long time, for example, as being very soothing. I mean,
even drums, I mean, you know, there's a long...
Yeah, a lot of Native Americans have used that. It's certainly not a new thing, but the Tibetan bowls has been introduced to this country a few years ago, and all of a sudden everybody's got a Tibetan bowl, and everybody's, you know, a Tibetan bowl, a healer.
I Googled on Tibetan bowls today, and I was surprised. You can buy them on eBay.
Right.
Now, they come in a variety of ages. I did see that, just what was available there. Now, how honest the seller is about their actual age, you know, I don't know. Some of them they claimed were a couple of hundred years old. Some of them they claimed were, you know, under 100, but more than 50. And some they said were modern creations.
Well, you know, it's not always just the age of the bowl. It's also the quality. And the quality has a lot to do with, in Asia, the way to ensure that you're getting the highest quality is eyeball to eyeball. Asians, I mean, in Nepal and Tibet, people are not into, you know, pop me an email and make an order. They'll send you an order, but they're certainly not going to send you the best stuff. And there are lots of old bowls that are still out there, and many, 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 many of them are not good quality anymore. So there's the age, and there's the price, and there's the quality. So the best way to ensure is to go over there yourself, have a long-term relationship with the person that is already known there as being able to locate and collect really good quality bowls. So a lot of the people on eBay, a lot of people around buy from wholesalers, and those people sell, they sell bowls, and they're, you know, they're okay, but they're certainly not nothing that I would use for healing, because for healing, I want the highest quality. I want an instrument that has the most intrinsic healing energetic in it, energy in it, and not just, you know, a knockoff that is made to look old, which is not really old, or whatever.
I think that's true of anything that also qualifies as being, you know, somewhat of an antiquity or whatnot. You know, you have your knockoffs, and you're so dependent on the seller being honest as well as your ability to accurately assess the quality of the item you're looking at.
And that's also, I developed a home study course, and I have teleclasses, and one of the reasons I do that is because I want people to be educated themselves. I want people to start learning how to determine through sound and through the visuals what to look for, and to, you know, to not be taken. We're in a society where people are ripping each other's off all over the place. And if I can contribute to that not happening by helping people to become educated, then I would be very happy.
And that's the thing is oftentimes the practitioner may not be competent, but they may not perceive themselves as a con artist either. They're incompetent by inexperience or
right. They don't know what they don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I've encountered it in every field imaginable where people are professionals, but professional just means you're getting paid to do it. It doesn't give you a stamp of quality or skill or natural ability or education, because I've seen some people do some incredibly stupid things as professionals.
Yeah.
You know, and that's every field, not just healing or healing with sound or Tibetan bowls, you know. It's everywhere.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why we're offering this program, and we are, we're establishing the standards, and we're certifying that those people who have gone through our course, who are our workshop, have attained those standards and been evaluated, and then we can recommend them. You know, because I get calls from people all over the country saying, do you know anyone in this area? And, you know, we really want to start to get a community of well-trained people that we can refer.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. I mean, okay, so say someone is interested in learning this. They sign up for your school, they go to California to attend it. How long, you know, time-wise is this going to take on the average?
Well, what happens is the first thing they do when they sign up is they get a home study course, and that's that is a course that they can do. They can take as long as they want. It's an e-book that they can print out, and a DVD and a CD, and it's an instructional manual, and it gives you enough information and enough practice that you can then come to a workshop, a live workshop. So even if you only have a few instruments, you can really start to understand the principles of the instruments and the tasks of the instruments in healing, because each instrument has a different task. And then they come to, so that they can do that from their home anywhere they want to, and they keep a log of their practice sessions. Then they come to an introductory workshop, and we offer four workshops, well, five, but the year runs from June through March. And they are intensive weekend workshops 3 months apart, four of them. So someone can come through the program. It takes about 18 months. And in between, they're doing practice sessions, they're reading, they're doing teleclasses, they're communicating with each other. I started a Yahoo group or a Google group through So they're doing some reading, they're keeping logs of their practice sessions, they're coming to teleclasses, they're refining their skills, and then they come to, so there are three advanced. There's the intro and there's three advanced. And I would say if somebody went from beginning to end, it takes about 3 months. 18 months. But I also offer an introductory course in January. And that's because a lot of people don't want to wait a whole year to get started. So there are two intro courses, but really, even if you take a course in January, you have to wait till the next advanced class to jump in.
And that's kind of interesting because, you know, a lot of people are, we're Americans, okay, we're all about how quick is this going to go through, you know, can I do this, you know, on my lunch break, you know, time, fast food, fast everything. And, you know, over 18 months, you know, if you're, it's going to require people to slow down and think about what they're doing.
Well, I think that the thing that I've seen here in the States, which is, you know, it is part of the culture, and that is not only doing it fast, but do something, and it's very other-related, oriented. People can't wait to get their hands on the bowls and can't wait to do it for their friends and help other people. But the bowls were created for consciousness transformation, not somebody else's, ours, our own. So the work has to start with the practitioner working with the instruments for their own benefit, understanding and feeling and going through that transformation and then beginning to think about working with other people.
Well, isn't there also a quote in the Bible? I'm thinking that's where it's from. Healer, heal thyself.
Yeah,
you know, you can't fix someone else if you can't even fix yourself.
So that is probably the single most, I would say, challenge for me as a teacher and as a mentor, to keep bringing it back. I know you want to do it for your friends. I know you get a lot of positive feedback from other people, but this is, at first, it's really all about yourself. So we think that, you know, at the end of 18 months, people will really have understood that, because everybody's students are so excited to show their friends and families and, you know, all the little layouts and what they can do, but it's not really... That's the technical part. We're not trying to put out technicians. We're trying to create really masterful healers.
Yeah, and, you know, there again, that we have this American thing to be in a hurry. I've watched it with vacation. I have to admit, a lot of times it was Europeans doing it too. But they're in such a hurry to have fun that I don't think they have time to have fun. You know, I see people who think that they can leave Las Vegas in the morning, stop at the Grand Canyon, go to Flagstaff, Arizona, and stop at Meteor Crater, then go to New Mexico, go to the Acoma community on top of the mountain there, and be back in Vegas that night. And I'm like, you're out of your mind. You can't even drive that, let alone stop. And I said, besides that, don't you think the Grand Canyon deserves more than a 5-minute stop?
Yeah, right.
I think for all of us, whether we want to be healers or not, sometimes to slow down and take in the roses, notice that they have thorns, you know, all that kind of stuff is really good for us, because we are in too much of a hurry too often.
Absolutely.
And that's you know, I'm kind of glad to hear that, you know, you kind of educate your practitioners about that as well, because, you know, I think it's important. You know, with all the technology that we have available to us today, you know, even in terms of healthcare, what role does something like these bowls really have in our society?
What role will they have?
Yeah, what role? You know, where do you see the bowl thing ultimately going? I mean, you've dedicated yourself to school. You're putting a lot of work into educating people. You know, how do you see it fitting into our focus on you know, fixing it with technology and pharmaceuticals?
I don't pay attention that much to pharmaceuticals. I feel that the whole point of these is that they bring your body into the kind of balance that will speed up the healing. So they're so complementary. I mean, that's why I'm in the cancer center, because not because the bowls are a cure, but because they facilitate, they help to speed up the healing process. So I see them being very, more and more, you know, medical schools are starting to offer alternative health care training for their doctors. So people are more and more aware. This is more prominent, you know, in Europe, but it's catching on here too. And so I see it eventually being as, you know, here the Sharp Hospital and the Women's Hospital. All these hospitals now have in integrative therapy departments, and that is because they're very excellent complements to allopathic and traditional medicine. They don't take away, they contribute to, they help with the process, and oftentimes they alleviate the need for maybe surgery or certain kind of medication. I don't know how many people that I've weaned off of depression medicine through this modality.
You know, I guess what I'm really kind of curious about is, would this type of therapy be useful in a preventative scenario to prevent serious illness?
Where would the reduction of stress and the promotion of well-being not be useful?
Exactly, you know, but...
Where would it not be useful to feel yourself relaxed and related and that sense of interrelationship with the universe and with the earth and with other people? Where would that not be helpful?
Yeah, I guess when so often, at least, you know, among Americans, I don't know if it's perceived differently in Europe or Asia, so often we regard healing as after the fact. You're already sick. And maybe we need to focus on healing before we get sick.
Yeah, it's a process. Yeah, the process of, you know, not only healing your body, but your mind, or just, you know, even if you don't think of it as a healing, just thinking of it as a way to stay connected, a way to keep strong, to stay strong. A way to stay well, to strengthen your wellness, to expand your joy, to expand, you know, what works.
You know, the more I listen to you talking about this form of therapy, I sort of see it as a non-physical inoculation. You know, you're preventing something by alleviating the stress, by realigning yourself with who you are and with being well and with being, you know, whole and perfect and everything. And I find that fascinating.
You know, I've had, you know, some of the most fascinating sessions I've had have been with people who have not been physically sick, but who have had emotional or spiritual hindrances. I remember a mother and a son who came in, and they had been warring. I mean, he was 16 years old. He thought his mother was a real jerk. He was, you know, going off in the wrong direction, and she brought him in here as a birthday present, but she didn't tell him because she knew if she told him, he would think it was just so woo-woo that he wouldn't get here. He wouldn't even come with her. So she just told him it was a birthday surprise, and he was, you know, he wasn't exactly rude when he got here, but he wasn't totally open, but he was curious in the way I explained what was going to happen. Well, I can tell you at the end of the session, it brought them doing a session for the mother and the son, and often also for husband and wife, brings people back to a place they had forgotten in their relationship. That was what was precious about it, and what was, because when you're feeling that kind of well-being and that kind of relaxation within yourself, you let go of the anger and of the, you know, whatever is going on, and you just get back to yourself. And at the end of this session with this young man, he looked at his mom, and he just said, "Wow, you know, Mom, I didn't realize this. I didn't realize you were so cool. You know, I didn't realize that you would be interested in anything that was so cool." And they walked out hand in hand. It gave them a level playing field, and that's what it does. It brings you back to a certain consciousness, and it gets rid of all the junk. You know, of the junk
that's not really who you are. Yeah, listening to you tell that story, I'm like, where were you when my daughter was a teenager? We had a couple of years where, I wasn't sure if either one of us was going to survive. Yeah, you know, and really that was, it wasn't that we had any major conflicts. It was the...
You just lose touch.
Yeah.
Literally, you're losing touch.
Everything turned into a battle.
Yeah.
Everything turned into a battle, and it was a tough time. We had to really work at developing a relationship. We have a great one now that she's an adult. But like I said, I had a couple of years with her where, whoa, I could have used you. Because it was a tough row, and if we could have avoided that, just think where we could have gone a whole lot sooner.
Yeah.
And to all of you out there with teenagers or kids that are about to become teenagers, maybe you ought to double-check the website, and we've got all the links for beyond there, and consider an appointment, because, you're in for some fun. Even if you had a great relationship prior to puberty, there's something that happens during puberty sometimes.
It happens to parents as well as to children. It's not a one-sided thing. Parents get stuck in their thinking. They have expectations that aren't met. You know, a lot of time a parent doesn't realize that they're not just being unconditional in their love, and they have to get back to recognizing what that is so that the child feels loved no matter how they're turning out, and they feel that acceptance, and they feel that. And then the parent has to learn how to love and accept and still be able to make their wishes or make their desires known at the same time, but without shaming or blaming or forcing. And so all of that is stuff that's the kind of work that we do, but it starts at a very heart-centered level. So it's not, you know, all this cognitive, you have to do this. It really starts from feeling those feelings of deep love again, so that it makes you want to work things out. It makes you want to be on the same
side. Maybe it helps you show your feelings, because I didn't love my daughter any less when she had emerald green hair, or when it was jet black, or with the goth jewelry and makeup. I still loved her the same. I may not have really been thrilled about how she looked sometimes, but I knew that was just a facade. She was still the same kid, but I don't know that she knew that all the time then.
Right.
And, you know, maybe it was because, you know, we weren't in tune. I wasn't able to express myself in a way she understood, and she wasn't able to express where I understood, and we had all these immense conflicts that, looking back on them, were really, really silly. You know, but... It is always 2020.
And you both lived through them. There you go.
Yeah, we both lived through them, and, my hair is very gray, though. Yeah, my hair is very gray. But, yeah, you know, and then, you know, with helping with relationships, you know, we have so many important relationships in our life, and if something like this can help improve the quality of them, you know, it's definitely worth our at least a second look.
Well, it helps us maintain and strengthen relationships with ourselves, with other people, but also something very important. It helps us to strengthen our relationship with perspective. With this perspective of whatever is really going on gives us more perspective of normally how small that is in the context of, you know, the larger picture. So it gives us the opportunity to step out of where we are and see the larger picture and experience that.
And that sometimes can be kind of tough. I mean, you have
a bad day
at work, you know, and that becomes your entire reality. And, you know, at that moment when you're able to step aside and say, look, in the overall scheme of things, will I remember today, 10 years from now? No, it doesn't matter. This too shall pass, you know? and that's a tough lesson. I wish I had learned better how to do that 20 years ago. My hair might not be so gray today. You know, and that's the truth. You know, about the time you start really figuring it out, you know, you could have used it so many years before. You know, and we're so hard-headed sometimes when we're young. And I find listening to you talking about these goals is really intriguing. And finding out that you're going to be starting to certify people so that we can be assured that they are trained and that they are been evaluated, that they have, you know, achieved a level of competence, that they know what they're doing, and, you know, are actually doing something besides making some noise.
Is it worthwhile to mention the websites, or is that...
Sure, yes. Go ahead and give everybody the websites. We're actually getting close. We've only got a few minutes left.
Okay, so there are two websites. One of them is www.soundenergyhealing. That's all one word, soundenergyhealing.com. And for those who might be interested in training, it is very simple, www.tibetanbowlschool.com. TibetanBowlSchool.com, all one word.
Yeah, we are getting near to the end of the program. So, folks, we do have to take a break now. And I want to thank Dionne for coming on the program tonight and telling us a little bit about her bowls and healing. I hope it's been as enthralling to you as it has been to me. Stay tuned to the Paranormal Radio Network, and when we return, Karen Anderson will join us on the Dawn of Shades.
Hello.
called The Dawn of Shades. I bring in a wide variety of guests, and we talk about all sorts of things. Some of them are authors, some of them are experiencers, but it's all paranormal. Do tune in to The Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays, and you can always catch our guest list at www.gscott.com.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We'll go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, Trace Sheridan for Global Focus. Come join us for a discussion of ufology and related topics at a new day and time. As of June 2nd, Monday evenings at 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Only on UPRN 105.8 FM New Orleans and the Paranormal Radio Network.
Portal Paranormal Talk Radio with hosts Tuesday Miles and Angela Thomas invite you each week to join into their show. Your chance to talk about ghosts, paranormal research, psychics, and much more. For more information, visit their website at www.portaltalkradio.com. Portal Paranormal Talk Radio on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
You are listening to the Paranormal Radio Network.
Talking with animals. I know that during the day, that's what I do. I work with animals. I don't talk to them the same way you do. Our conversations can be heard by anybody paying attention or seen, because sometimes it's more of a body language thing, really, from them. But, yeah, sometimes I'm really curious, you know, what they have on their mind. Why are you acting like this? This isn't making sense. You know, is that the sort of thing you really do help with?
You know, there's so many different things that people call me about, so many different reasons and topics. Just today I had a session where the animal had died suddenly last October, and there was still a lot of guilt and still a lot of sadness over the passing of this dog. And this particular client just wanted to check in and see how the dog was doing and see what messages there were for him and, you know, just make sure that they're okay. And it's just, it was really, really amazing some of the things that this dog brought up in what was currently going on with her human and seeing things that he was doing even yesterday. So a very, very comforting for the human to hear from their animals who have passed on.
Yeah, and losing, you know, your animal companion is very, very traumatic. Knock on wood, it won't be happening to me for quite a while. But we did have, we have a client that Friday came in to, he said to check his reservations, confirm them. And in reality, he came in to tell us that the dog in question, who is very old and has not been in very good shape for a long time, was going to be put down. And, you know, he started crying then, and I felt so bad for him. But, you know, I knew at the same time from, you know, just the last time I had seen the dog, that the dog was getting ready, you know. He was really getting ready. He had lived a long time, and he's a big, big, like a Dalmatian, Great Dane cross, big dog. And he'd had extreme difficulty in walking. He'd had to have help for walking for 3 or 4 years now. He's like 15, you know, he was very old. He had been getting ready. I knew that just from watching him. But his people weren't ready.
Well, I think you really hit the nail on the head there. There's been many, many times, Gia, more times than I would like to even admit, that when I connect with the animal, they tell me that they are ready to go and they're tired of being in a body that's failing them, and their humans are just not ready to let them go. And so they end up keeping them here, postponing the inevitable, and unfortunately causing the animal, you know, extra time being here, uncomfortable and not really wanting to be here. And there's a fine line between, you know, when is the right time to say goodbye? You know, when do you make that decision? And I always tell my clients that it's different every time. It's personal and it's unique to each situation. You certainly can't say, you know, the same thing applies with every animal in every situation because everything's going to be different. But there's a few tips that I give to my clients and tell them to watch for with their own animals. And I'd like to share those with your listeners, too, if that's okay.
That sounds like a wonderful idea.
One of the primary things that happens when animals are getting to the end of their lifespan is sometimes they will separate themselves from the family and they will go off by themselves more. They will spend more time alone, away from other family members or other animals. And the reason that they do this, it's quite instinctual. Out in the animal kingdom, when animals are ill or injured, they often separate themselves from the herd or the pack or the colony to prevent predators from coming in and endangering the rest of the herd. Or sometimes they're actually driven out by other pack members or other herd members. And often they are left to fend for themselves, and they either succumb to predation, to the elements, or they succumb to their original illness or injury. But what we do is we keep them in our houses, we keep them safe and protected, and we continue to feed them and water them and give them medical care and medicine and surgeries and chemotherapy and all kinds of other things, and we keep extending their lives probably long past what their natural lifespan would have been if we weren't in the picture. And so we're actually keeping our animals alive a lot longer now than we ever have before. So if you see your animal starting to separate themselves from you or from the family, this is one really big indicator that their time may be coming up soon, and then you have to really start paying attention to some of the other behaviors. Have you ever seen anything like that happen, Gia?
Yeah, and sometimes I question whether sometimes it's more than just a physical separation. They begin to interact less. They may not react when you pet them anymore.
Right.
They may snap at you.
Right.
Or if they always snap at you, they may stop. You know, I saw that recently with an old dog. The dog hated me, okay? You know, the way to put it. But he hated everybody, you know, except his daddy, all right? And he was a Lhasa Apso, so anybody who knows Lhasas knows exactly what I'm talking
about.
Yes, yes. And, you know, when the last year of his life, he no longer snapped at me. You know, and he quit snapping at everybody. And he started physically separating himself more and more. And finally, he was to the point, he died on his own. He was 17. You know, but he gradually, you know, created that separation until his time was right.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, he just spent a lot of time sleeping. And then afternoon, he passed away.
Right. And wouldn't it be nice if they all just went on their own time and we didn't have to make that horrible decision?
Yeah, it would be. You know, and I know a lot of people that I know, they say that, okay, as long as they're eating, that means they want to be alive, that they want a chance. So as long as they're eating, they won't, you know, take that step of having them put down. And, you know, as long as they're eating and seem happy. You know, when a dog's in pain, they're not going to eat.
Right.
Same thing with cats. They're not going to eat.
Right. You know? And when they go off their food, when they go off their water, that's red flag number two. That's really another, you know, instant sign to you, their moms or their dads, their caretakers, that there's something very, very wrong happening within their body. Their body's starting to shut down, and that's another sign that you need to really start paying close attention to them, because they may not be able to go easily on their own time. It may be very,
right.
Very,
you know,
painful.
Yeah, maybe painful at that point.
Right. And so you need to really monitor and watch them. And, you know, there's something about they lose themselves. They become almost a little senile, or they don't seem like themselves, or they get lost in the house, or they seem confused. There is a doggy dementia that some dogs experience.
We call it doggyheimer.
Doggyheimers, yes. And, you know, kitties get it too. They just kind of, you know, they're not really there, you know, all the time. And you just really need to monitor them. And checking in with each animal to see what their wishes are, at least you know how they feel. At least you can make a decision based on what the animal's needs and wants and wishes are, because there have been many, many times that the animals tell me that they're ready to go, but mom and dad aren't. And so they stay here longer and longer, and they really are ready to pass on. I've never had a single animal, this is a kind of an amazing statistic, there's never been a single animal, and I'm going to guesstimate in the thousands of sessions that I've had, where an animal has that has passed away tells me that their mom or dad sent them away too soon. That has never happened.
Uh-huh. Now, I do have a question in the virtual auditorium, and the question is, are we playing God by putting them to sleep?
I think you said, are we playing God by putting them to sleep?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that it's a very personal decision, and I think that you have to take everything into consideration. I think you need to take the animal's medical condition, their level of pain and discomfort. I think that certainly your spiritual or religious beliefs come into play. I would never, ever tell anybody when it was time to euthanize their animal. I think that's just too personal of a decision. And like the person was saying, it's very, very difficult. And, you know, I don't like doing it any more than anyone else likes doing it. But I'm also, I personally, and I'm speaking personally here, I'm not going to let one of my animals suffer needlessly just to be here and to wait for their body to expire on their own. I personally won't do that. That may not be what everybody else agrees to, but I personally can't do that.
Yeah, you know, I watch these dogs, you know, over the years, and it's mostly dogs. You know, they go from a happy, active dog to, you know, a geriatric dog, and then they develop doggyheimer. And most of the time, you know, in the early stages of doggyheimer, they're happy. They're not, they're lost, but they're happy about it, you know?
Right.
when they get to the point where they get lost and they have a hard time finding their food and water dishes, then you start to really kind of question, you know, the quality of life here. But when they get to the point where they're not only lost but they're unhappy, then, you know, and they may be, you know, suffering physical disabilities at that time too.
Right.
May not be able to get up on their own. They may not be able to control their bowels and bladder. So they're always, you know, needing bathe because they've soiled themselves. And,
right.
And you know, they've got, you know, all the skin problems and the tumors. All the things that come with old age if you're a dog.
Right.
And, you know, and they're unhappy about everything. You know, they start snapping at everybody and you have to make sure nobody gets near them. You know, I think then maybe, you know, a lot of times they're 15, 16 years old. 20 years ago, a 15-year-old dog was the equivalent of a 110-year-old person.
Right. And, you know, I'm gonna give you the play devil's advocate here and give you the other flip side of the coin. There are sometimes, Gia, where the animals tell me, I want to stay. I want to fight this. I'm not ready to go. And they have, like, every possible illness you could possibly have, or they have so many things stacked against them. And some guys are just, they want to hang in there, and they want to fight it, and they want to stay here. So I have seen both sides of that, and that's why I say each animal is different. Each situation is truly unique.
Yeah, I have my devoted companion now is Red Dog, and you know, I could actually see Red saying she wanted to fight it simply because she does not regard me as competent to breathe without her by my side.
Right.
You know, and she really, I think she, that's the way she sees it. If
right.
she's not with me, I'm incapable of getting across the room. The cats are going to take over the house. She's sure of it. Yeah. You know, she's probably...
I just got a good visual there. That was funny.
She is. She's absolutely a maniac about being with me. You know, if I go to the bathroom and close the door, this is a traumatic event.
Oh, yeah, we're not allowed to close bathroom doors in my house because it'll just get pushed open.
Yeah, the cats are much more efficient at pulling the door open than she is because it opens the wrong way for her
yeah.
if I close it. Yeah, and the cats will open it for her, you know, even though they hate each other, you know, they do cooperate.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, they're a continual source of amusement for me.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. You know, where would I be without them to keep me poor and occupied and happy?
Well, I would love to share with you a session that I had yesterday, a deceased dog that I contacted. It was quite a surprise to me. The woman who called, the dog belonged to her son. And the son had died last summer. He was very young. I think he was in his 20s, and he was in the military, and I'm not quite sure what the circumstances were, but the dog belonged to the son, and the mom was taking care of the dog while the son was in the military. And so I was connecting with the deceased dog, and the dog brought through the energy of her deceased son. And he came through with messages for his mom, bringing up things that were going on in her life right now and telling her what he's doing on the other side and how he's around her all the time and he loves her and misses her. And let me tell you, this was an emotional ride for this client and me both. It was truly amazing, the messages that were coming through, and I felt so honored to be a part of it. And he was so proud and wanted her to be so proud of him, and he was still helping individuals on the other side or in heaven or the afterlife, whatever you want to call it. He was helping others over there, just like she said, just like he did here on Earth. And I feel so honored sometimes, Gia, to be a part of these reunions and to be able to deliver messages like this. It was like helping in a little way mend a terribly broken heart. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yep, definitely. That would be a very interesting reading, you know, simply because there are so many things that come into play there. you know?
All the courtesy of his dog, who had also passed away, and her question was that she wanted to know if the dog had found her daddy, her son, if they had reunited over on the other side, and that's when the dog said, well, yeah, he's right here, and then the dog brought the son's energy through, so it was just beautiful, and she was very touched and very comforted and very, very happy to hear from her son and to hear that he was okay and how much he loves her and how much he's around her. It was very, very special.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Now, you had I have a book out called Hear All Creatures, The Journey of an Animal Communicator. Didn't you also just recently release a book, or am I mistaken?
No, just the one.
Just the one, okay.
Just the one.
For some reason,
creatures.
I was thinking you had a second book about to come out.
I'm still working on it, Gia.
Still working on it, huh? Okay, well, I jumped the gun on that one. I don't know why I had the idea that you had it, you know, about to be released. But I sure I did. I had it sticking in my head. Oh, you're about to release your new book. Are you still there, Karen? I think we've lost Karen. Well, our producer will surely get her back here shortly. You know, the book that she has out, The Journey of an Animal Communicator, we're not talking about a real big book here, but it's a fascinating book. It's published by New River Press, and if I remember correctly, it's available on Amazon. Also, if you go to our website, which is www.exogenynetwork.com, click on the Live 2 link at the top of the page, and that will take you to a page about Karen Anderson, and has all the links for her books, or her book rather, and where you can get it, or where her website is. If you're interested in getting a reading yourself, you can also get that there. And yeah, it's really, you know, she's a fascinating, fascinating woman. A lot of people find the whole idea of animal communication a little bit strange. But, you know, at the same time, you know, why not? It seems like a perfect thing to have happen. But in the meantime, folks, we're going to take a brief break, so do stay tuned. And the Dawn of Fades will be right back with Karen Anderson, we hope.
Yeah.
program is going live in just a second again. Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. We're back with Karen Anderson, and we're going to continue right on along with the program. Now, Karen, you were, while we were still on break when you first came back, we were talking a little bit about your upcoming book, that you were going to talk about the animals themselves. You want to tell the audience a little bit more? Sort of give them a taste of what they'll have to be looking for? Hello, Karen.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm here. It's just now it's hailing here in Spokane.
Ah.
So it's coming down so hard I can just barely hear you.
Okay.
Were you asking me about my book, Gia?
Yes, I was. What, to tell the audience a little bit about what it's going to be about, sort of give them a taste so they know what to look for.
Okay, well, the book that's out, Hear All Creatures, and they can get that now at Amazon or other retailers, Borders, Barnes & Noble. You can order a personalized autographed copy from my website, which is KarenAnderson.net. And it's all about understanding what how the animals send us messages and how sometimes they talk from their own perspective. And it has many wonderful stories in it about different experiences of what the animals have shared with me and what they've shared with their humans, which can be quite interesting too. And we have topics like behavior problems, lost animals, health issues, all kinds of stuff in there. The next book that I'm working on right now is all about animals in the afterlife and just what we were talking about before we went to break of the healing messages that come through from animals who have passed away and how they can help us heal and move on and help us release some of that guilt that we're holding on to sometimes surrounding their death. Either we blame ourselves for not doing something or for doing something too soon or not enough, but many of us struggle with those issues.
So. It's always hard when you lose your companion. You know, another thing that I'm kind of curious about, maybe you can answer the question, is not so much our psychic, our human psychic connection with animals as animals' psychic connection with the world around them. You know, I know I've seen some things, I'm like, what are they seeing that I'm not seeing?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that it's, you know, here's an example. One night, at the same house I live in now, at that time, I still don't use my front door at all. And I had read my big dog's bed in front of the door. And actually, I didn't even have the second dog yet. I fostered dogs for a rescue group, and the dog I had at the time did not get along with Red. So I had a big crate in the living room, which I also used for housebreaking them. But this is a massive crate, big enough to put two Great Danes in. Anyhow, it was right smack dab in the middle of the house, you might say. And I was doing something, and I was walking past the crate, and Red was asleep on her bed. The other dog was asleep in the crate. You know, it's fairly late evening. Not the middle of the night, it was just late in the evening. And all of a sudden, Red jumps up out of her bed, and she spins around, she's facing the door, she's backing away, growling and snarling and barking. And, you know, I'm talking to her, and I'm not getting her reaction. She's completely fixated on something I can't see. So the hair in the back of my neck is standing up.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm staring, you know, I'm looking to see what is she seeing. And she's backing away, and she's obviously terrified, and she's rarely terrified. And she's tracking something with her eyes. So she's seeing something. And it's up, it moves up towards the ceiling, and it moves to the very center of the house, you know, among all the rooms, and then seemed to move back towards the door, then leave through the door, which never opened, of course. And, you know, at one point during this, when it was about at its furthest point from the door, her bladder let loose the fear response, which I'd heard about, but I'd never actually seen. Now, when you have a 65, 70-pound dog let their bladder loose, you know it's been let loose. She didn't squat or anything, just the urine dumps everywhere. And she's still growling and snarling and terrified. And then when it left through the door again, she starts, reacting to me, and she's obviously disturbed about the puddle on the floor, which, you know, I cleaned up. And, you know, I'm not going to yell at the dog. Something weird was going on. This isn't her normal thing. You know, just clean it up. She never would go near that door again. I actually have furniture in front of it now. I had to move her bed, and it was a couple of days before she was really secure about that bed again, too. Because I have beds, in the bedroom, beds out in the living room, dog beds are everywhere. But, yeah, she saw something I didn't see, and I found it a rather scary experience.
Well, I would, too. And this is not uncommon. I'll say that it does happen. Your case is more to the extreme of the ones that I have heard about, or the ones that I have experienced.
The most extreme I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty blatant. And yes, animals are very much in tune to energies that we can't see or feel or sense, and they don't always know what they are. They don't always understand. They can become frightened by them, or sometimes they're just amused by them, just watching them or sensing the energies. And I've noticed that when I hear about stories like this, it's usually staring up at the ceiling or up into the corner of a room. So there's something about the energies gathering in those areas or manifesting in those
areas. Really recently I've heard a lot about corners are bad for collecting negative energy.
Yes. So you're supposed to burn sage and clear out the corners of your house. And so that's quite an extreme case. And the thing that you need to remember, though, is that we are always in control, not the energies. And so you can just firmly ask them to leave, that you don't want them there, and send them on their way. You can surround them with white light. You never have to be afraid.
To be honest, I never felt anything other than fear because the dog is seeing something I can't see.
Right.
I didn't feel a thing. I didn't sense anything. I didn't have the cats yet either. My older cat, which I probably got her maybe 4 to 6 months after this incident, she often sits staring off with these huge round eyes, watching things I can't see.
Mm-hmm.
She's an oddball cat. And then my kitten, he's about 9 months old now, and he just thinks he rules the universe. Yeah, he will scratch and claw at the bedroom door if I close it, and meow. He's just like a dog in that, he wants in the bedroom too. Yeah, but, I haven't noticed anything like that with him ever, but there are nights when they run around like they're possessed, back and forth and all over and up and down, and they do. They run around like they're possessed.
Yep.
And I've heard about other cat owners having the same experience. Their cat's just a maniac, all the evening for no reason.
I hear stories about things like this, so there must be something extra going on in your house.
Well, I hope not. It doesn't sound like it would be exactly a desirable thing to have going on. But, yeah, I have been told that I have ghosts in my house. I used to frequently hear soft voices, like a radio turned down real low or like someone having a conversation in the other room.
Uh-huh.
But I don't anymore. That quit a couple of years ago. I don't hear that sort of stuff. My TV is unplugged, so it can't turn on anymore. I have a TV that turns itself on and splits your channels.
Oh, my. It sounds like you did have somebody there.
I don't know. The TV really started getting on my nerves. Because
yeah.
People would say, well, the dog got on the remote. Well, I don't watch TV, so I kept my remote on top of the TV. I don't think the dog was sitting on it there.
Right.
I finally unplugged it, and that's what I told all my friends. Okay, if that TV turns on now and starts flipping through channels, I'm leaving. I'm not coming back.
That's right. Sealing up the doors.
Yep, I will have nothing more to do with anything in this house, yeah.
No, I have had so many different experiences with different energies, and sometimes people ask me, don't you ever get scared because they've heard stories about ghosts and bad energies, and I have to be really honest, I have never personally had a bad experience with an energy, but I always take the precaution and I always say a prayer of protection before I begin any communication session, and I always work with only energies of the light, and I make a point of saying that in the beginning of all of my sessions. And so I always start from a place of white light and heavenly light and protective light, and so I'm never worried or concerned about anything bad or negative happening, and nothing bad has ever happened. In fact, things were scarier for me as a cop when I lived in Colorado, way more scary than anything I've ever done working with the animals and the energies. I would be much more afraid of a human living, walking, breathing human than I would be of any energy that might be out there.
I would have to agree with you, except I have to admit I happen to be personally very terrified of bears.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I really want to meet one up front and personal either.
yeah, you know, knowing that they can run 35 miles an hour and having had one pursue me from a distance, never did get particularly close. That was enough to put fear in me. You know, I have to admit, there are places that I have been where 35 miles an hour was a speed you could not achieve in a Jeep. And, you know, I was worried whether or not the bear was going to catch up. And, yeah, I am. That's originally the reason why I acquired Red Dog, who's my buddy now, was because of the fear of bears.
Do you guys have bears in New Orleans?
I didn't live in New Orleans then.
Oh, okay.
I don't
know of any swamp bears or anything.
Well, they do have bears out in the swamps, black bears. Yeah, there are bears, but have I ever had an encounter? No. I have seen lots of wild hogs, which I hear are far worse than a bear. I've seen deer. I have to admit, in 5 years of living in Louisiana, I have never seen a living armadillo. In fact, I make jokes that armadillos are like jackalopes. They're a prop the State Highway Department puts alongside the highway for publicity. Because I have never, ever seen one of those alive. I've seen lots of possums and, you know, all the other creatures.
Right.
But never an armadillo.
Yeah, I've unfortunately seen some alongside the road that didn't make it.
Yeah. I hear that when they see the bright lights, they roll up in a ball, which is not a good way to avoid the impact of a car.
Right.
You know, I don't know. You know, there again, I think this is a story like the jackalopes, you know, or a snipe hunt or something, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So I do razz everybody that they are merely plastic props put out by the State Highway Department, and they fall in the same category as jackalopes. So, you know, among the animals that you've communicated with, have you ever been asked to communicate with an exotic animal of some sort?
Well, yes, actually, there's been several. There, I have a client that does big cat rescue, lions, tigers, leopards, that sort of stuff. And so there was I had an opportunity to connect with a couple of Bengal tigers, which was extremely interesting. They're just such magnificent creatures, and you know their personalities are just as different as can be, and just like house cats, they're as unique as can be. And I've also had the opportunity to connect with some wild whales out in the ocean while I was out there, and went to SeaWorld last year and communicated with everything that I could possibly communicate with while I was down there. And I really was surprised, Gia, that the animals were as well adjusted. I didn't know what I was going to expect, because they're all caged and they're all, you know, confined. And I thought that they would be very depressed or very sad, and quite the contrary. Everyone was extremely happy. Everyone that I connected with, dolphins, whales, walrus, seals, sea lions, every single one of them came through. Their biggest complaint was a territorial issue, which of course would mean because of the space that they're in. But I was really surprised and pleasantly surprised that they were really very happy and very well adjusted, and nobody complained about being there.
Wow, that's interesting.
And I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what they were going to say.
Now, how about things like cold-blooded animals, you know, reptiles and snakes and whatnot?
One of my best friends here in Spokane actually has a ball python, and her name is Ka. And I talk to her all the time, and she mostly talks about things that are going on in her life, things that she experiences, which is usually has something to do with food or feeding or when she's going to get food or when she's going to eat. So that's usually a big topic with her. They're also extremely wise. They have a very, very high level of intelligence. And I get asked this question a lot, like, are dogs smarter than cats? Are dolphins smarter than dogs? And I can't put a blanket answer on that. It's just too individual. There's certain individuals in every species that are really, really wise and intelligent, and then likewise, there's certain individuals in every species that are just happy-go-lucky and just the average guy and not real high levels of intelligence or wisdom or spirituality. Just it's just very individual, just like in humans. You have some people that are really with it, and then you have some people that aren't so much with it, and it's the same thing with the animals.
I see the same thing with cats and dogs. You know, in my interaction with them, you know, there's some dogs I'm looking at them and I'm like, you know, that dog really is a blonde.
Yep.
You know, it's just, you know, the epitome of the blonde joke, you know, and it's like, whoa.
Yep.
They really are kind of dingy, you know, and very, they think everybody loves them, but they're dingy.
Yep.
You know, and I think the most intriguing one, the intriguing interactions have to be with some of the rescue dogs, because you don't know what happened in their life prior to their experience with you.
Right.
They often have issues going on, and trying to figure out, okay, what is the problem? What's causing this? You know, it's just, we have a shepherd mix. Female that's been with us for probably 6 to 9 months. It's a rescue, and I don't know if we'll ever get her placed. You know, she has serious issues about housebreaking. She makes a huge mess and jumps in it, smears it everywhere.
Oh my!
And then has aggression issues with other dogs. Now I found that when I told, you know, basically I told her, look, you can't do this. She grabbed another dog through the chain link fence. I could not figure out how she did it. I saw her do it, and she did it. And, you know, trying to, you know, informing her she couldn't do that has minimized her behavior, but I find that every time we find her a playmate, she starts it up with other dogs all over again.
Wow.
And, you know, it's going to be tough to find a home for her because of this behavior pattern, and I don't understand why.
Yeah, and that's really a tough one, and I work a lot with shelter animals because I donate my services to various nonprofit and animal rescues, trying to help animals like that release some of their phobias, release some of their anxieties, some of their frustrations, to give them a sense of you have people around you can trust, you have people around you who care about you, and try to get them back in the present moment because they spend a lot of their time in the past. So one of the things that has helped us when we're working with some of these really tragic cases is you have to gently but firmly keep them in the present, meaning you can't keep reliving their past or feeling sorry for them or being weak to them if they look fearful. You have to just really gently but firmly move forward and keep them in the present. You're with good people now. You're safe. You're protected. And you know, sometimes it is difficult, and there are cases like the one that you're talking about where there's
yeah, she's done real well. She interacts with us real well. She is not suspicious of us. She doesn't show any food aggression towards us. You know, she's great. But you add a stranger to the equation, she's immediately back to that very suspicious back of the kennel growling and,
right.
and threatening and add another dog and she's immediately aggressive.
Right.
And, you know, and yet we can introduce her one at a time to certain dogs. Like right now her playmate is a Great Dane that's over twice her size. She thinks he's wonderful. She thinks he's beautiful. But, you know, the next Great Dane that comes in, she might think is lunch.
Right.
We never know.
And you have to be so careful.
Yeah, you know, and you know, she's come a long ways, but, you know, like I said, you know, it's right now I'd take a very special home, someone who really could work with her and was going to be consistent with her, because she does still have issues, and that aggression with other dogs is a source of trouble. I have one that's like that, my little dog. I live in a divided household because after 2 years, she decided she was going to become aggressive with everybody. So she has part of the living room, and the other, and everybody else has the other part of the living room, and that's just life with us, you know?
Right.
She does fine with other dogs if I'm not around. So, you know, it's just a really, really weird situation. Why she became so jealous after so much time, I have never figured out. But she is. She's intensely jealous that way.
And sometimes I found that in some of the extreme cases, if I just let the animals vent, if they just get to kind of dump on me everything that they feel like, I give them the opportunity to just say whatever they want or talk about whatever they want. It's kind of like, you know, when you have a really bad day and you call up your best friend and you just kind of dump on them. And
they don't
necessarily help you or resolve your issues, but you just feel better, like you got it all off your chest. Sometimes that can really help the animals, too, just kind of getting it all off their chest and kind of, you know, just getting rid of that baggage. And so that's where, you know, a session with an animal communicator can come in and be helpful. You know, it may not resolve the aggression problem, but the dog's feeling much better, not carrying all of that around with them, because they do. The shelter animals who've had troubled backgrounds, they tend to carry their old stuff with them, and thus...
And maybe that's Sissy's issue, because she was I think I'm her third or fourth home.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one that has been more than 6 months.
Yeah.
She's been with me over 3 years now. And a lot of people think I'm crazy because I said I was keeping her despite the fact that, you know, I had to have this divided household thing going on. And the reason I went to that was because the size difference between the two dogs, when the little one starts to fight, it's the little one that gets hurt.
Right.
And the injuries have got progressively worse. It's like the big dog's trying to teach her a lesson, but I'm afraid the next lesson, if it's harsher than the last one, could be potentially fatal, and I don't want that.
Yes.
So that was the reason I said, okay, enough is enough. Obviously, they're not going to resolve it on their own, so this is what we're going to do.
And, you know, I have three really big dogs, too, and they're all rescues, and they all have issues, and they learn to get along with each other for the most part, but sometimes there will be maybe even a piece of kibble on the ground, or maybe just somebody looks at the other one the wrong way, or someone steps into their space, or someone's just had a, you know, grumpy bad day, and they will literally jump on each other and start attacking, like full, you know, full body and neck attacks. And it's very upsetting, and it's hard to stay, you know, calm and focused when your dogs are going at each other like that, but it's so important to not add to the chaos, you know, when something like
right,
that happens.
Right, right. And maintaining your own safety, because, you know, when they're fighting like that, now I have to admit, the big dog has never turned around and bit me, but the little one has. And, you know, she's put the hurt on me. She didn't, you know, really do all that much skin tearing, but the bruising around the bite was pretty sufficient.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I have to be careful how I get her, because she will. Whereas the other one is focused on the other dog. It's funny, when I grab her by the scruff of the neck, she knows it's me. She doesn't turn around after me.
Yeah.
You know, but the little one, well, for one thing, she's harder to grab. She's got shorter hair. You can't grab her by the scruff of the neck. She doesn't have loose skin like that. And so when you grab her, it's apt to be someplace where she can turn around. Whereas the big dog, I think it's easier to grab by the scruff of the neck or the collar.
Right.
And have yourself where you're not, you know, in immediate grasp.
Right.
You know, you have more space.
Right.
Yeah, a foot target versus a few inches. But yeah, you know, I've seen that, you know, with lots of dogs. They'll have a bad day, have a spat. 10 minutes from now, they'll be best friends again.
Right. And they do seem to get over it. You know, it's really weird. They'll be okay with each other and, you know, lying, spooning with each other out in the backyard, you know, 10 minutes later. So, you know, we do have...
Yeah, my pair are best friends with a fence between them.
Yeah. That's always good, too.
Good
fence.
Yeah, best friends, they do. They touch noses. The big one, or whichever one's loose in the yard, will lay beside the other one in the playpen. And, you know, they're very companionable. And I have a barrier that I feel like I'm not going to have a big vet bill afterwards, you know?
Right. Oh, yes. Let's avoid those big vet bills.
Yeah. And they're going up just about like human bills.
Yeah.
We are getting low on time, so you want to go ahead and give your website one more time?
Oh, sure. And I want to talk about my teleclasses. I'm offering two-hour teleclasses where I teach you how to communicate with animals over the telephone. You don't need a computer. You just need a telephone. And the next one is July 14th, and if you're interested, the details are on my website, which is KarenAnderson.net. There's an events page that has a calendar, and all of the registration information is there, or you can just contact me through the website for more information. And they're great fun, and I can teach someone how to do this in about 15 minutes, so check it out.
That's fun.
Yeah, check it out and learn how to communicate with your animals. It has changed my life.
Okay, with that, folks, we are out of time. It's been a fascinating program tonight. It seemed to be all too soon. I hope that the information that was available to you from our guest has helped you on your personal journey towards truth. For information about tonight's guest as well as future guests, please go to exogenynetwork.com. There's a Donna Shades link on the bar there, as well as all the other information available. While you're there, vote in the poll we're taking and sign up for the newsletter. There's also a $5,000 prize to be given away this year to one of the people who signs up for the newsletter. So that's a fun thing, too. With that, I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good.